Barbara had a
they're
big,
easy to also.
Barbara had a big rival at the time, the first openly gay, maybe elected official in Minnesota, maybe it was Alan Spear, but Brian Coyle was the first gay Minneapolis City Council member, and he and Barbara, for whatever reason, just were cats and dogs, and Brian was a good source of mine, so he had filled my notebook with a lot of interesting stuff that I could verify about Barbara, and so and Barbara was just as ever as anybody who remembers Barbara, she's still around. I saw her the other day. Knows, you know, Barbara would overreact to any comment about her, even if it was, you know, pleasant, and so she was a great foil to write about, and she almost made her predicament worse. Well, she believe me, when we used to do the handoff at 9 o'clock, and she would always try to get her revenge on me, would always try to embarrass me and put me in a bad spot, which was fine, fair is fair, but it made for some interesting moments.
Barbara makes a great video and audio. We need more Barbara on there. It is fantastic audio and video to watch and listen to.
Yeah, you know, it's like she's like a lot of radio talents that I've either worked with or watched, which is some real talent, some definite, like, indelible radio talent there. But would if they could just 5% of them could just – that 5% of their being could actually take direction, could take comments or criticism from their bosses, they would be so much more awesome. The trouble is, I guess, you never really know which 5% you're supposed to take. So.
True enough. My guest, David Brower, today. This is Flashback Twin Cities. No, you're exactly right. And this is the 20th anniversary this year, 93, or, you know, 1993. Barbara Carlson hosted a debate for the mayors of St. Paul and Minneapolis. She asked bizarre questions. She asked questions that no debate moderator – I mean, we're used to debate moderators like Bob Schieffer, Jim Lehrer. So Barbara Carlson gives everyone signs to hold up and down. We thought the YouTube debate a few years ago was wacky. I'm going to put this up online in a few months when it's more closer to the mayor's race, but – in the Good Company set, Barbara Carlson has 10 different mayoral candidates and starts asking them about their personal lives, their drug use, their legal issues. It makes for great video.
Yeah, that sounds totally like Barbara. I'll watch it when you put it up because, again, there is some real brilliance about Barbara and probably some things that she did differently that, especially at that time, needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But there was so much... And this is true for like all of us egotistical people. There's so much indulgence there that, you know, that's one of the reasons that you end up wearing poorly on an audience is that you get some success, and Barbara definitely had that. But over time, you start to indulge yourself, and you don't wear quite as well. You're not as authentic. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, one of the things if I had it all to do all over again is I was very self-critical of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the numbers backed it up. But I look back and I say I was too hard on myself, that I should have trusted myself more. I should have been more comfortable
Relax,
in my
have
skin.
Fun, enjoy what you're doing.
Or just follow your, you know, just believe that what you're doing is good and true. I had a different problem than most radio hosts had at the time. So, but, you know, it was one of those things that it was like the facts as we know them. It was a great experience. It was doing something different, which I always enjoy doing. I change whatever I'm doing about every 4 years. And, you know, it helps you in other walks of life. You know, as I cover the media now for MinPost, you know, having been inside a lot of these operations, I have a little bit more insight than somebody from
people still call you back, which is great, because a couple of your fellow columnists I know over the years, they almost isolate themselves by – it's tough to say. You need to be a critic. You need to be critical of what's going on. But if you isolate yourselves, if you're so harshly critical of everything they do, you end up isolating yourselves from all – sources.
It's tricky because the act of talking to people, which is a basic repertorial act and something I value and still do, it does sometimes get you in a position of being too sympathetic to the person that you're talking to. And so sometimes the idea is, well, to remain an outsider and to remain, you know, truly critical, and you've got to just follow your nose. But I agree. The downside is when you stop talking to people, when you start thinking everything begins and ends inside of your own head, I don't think you're a more effective journalist.
Let's take a break. My guest, David Brower, will come back, talk about MinPost and media in the digital age. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond, my guest, David Brower of MinPost, minpost.com. And we were talking about earlier in the show and then just now, I think the anger level when the weather's nice goes down. The sun's out. We're less angry. I think for about 6 weeks when it was snowing 2 inches every day, just a lot of angst. However, I read your column very faithfully. I read The Glean, read a lot of columnists and posts, some who maybe I would align with, some who I would not. I'm always amazed by the number of commentators that are on there within 5 minutes. There's commentators, some of them are writing columns as long as you are writing, and there's some characters on there, much like talk radio, the same characters used to call up all the time. They have nicknames. You must find it very similar in the commentating world, of especially the detractors. The detractors are the ones that are on there within 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's. I mean, obviously, I have commenters on my stuff. I don't know. You know, over the years, I think the hater quotient for my stuff has gone down, and I think part of the reason is that I am willing to engage just about anybody, mm-hmm. as long as they're dealing in good faith. I mean,
right.
if they start to get stupid or just mean-spirited, or they just want their pound of flesh, then, you know, if they're on Twitter, I'll block them. And if their comments that are you know, just really off point, I'll delete them. But I think most, you know, the overwhelming majority of people who disagree with me, I'm actually genuinely interested in hearing about mm-hmm. and responding to. And I think it's sort of who I am, but I think being in talk radio actually for 3 years made a big difference for me, because the thing I enjoyed the most about talk radio, aside from just getting to talk, was having conversations with people who thought differently than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to get them to agree with you. It is helpful if you can see where each other's coming from. And some of the best discussions I had, I'll tell you a great story about callers in the radio context. When at the very end of my radio stint, when my wife was pregnant with our son Ian, I got a call off the air from a frequent commenter, a frequent caller to my show named Doug. And Doug said, "Hey, you know what? My wife, Maureen, is a doula." And I said, "Well, what's a doula? I don't have any idea what a doula is." He said, "Well, you know, she's basically a birth coach. She's not a nurse, not a doctor, but attends the pregnancy, and her number one responsibility is seeing to the well-being of the mother."
Right.
And I said, "Wow, this sounds cool." And so we met with Maureen. Couldn't be more different than me. I'm a completely sort of unchurched, a-religious, lefty person. Maureen was an evangelical, conservative, you know, Bible-based person. That was the reason that she was doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
She was inspired by the Bible. And it couldn't have been a more fantastic experience. When we had our daughter, Abigail, a few years later, Maureen was the doula. If couples out there, if any of you are pregnant and you haven't considered a doula, you should consider it a doula. That was the sort of human relationship that I got to experience from somebody on the other side just by being human back. And so I remember that. And over the years, I think it's really held me in good stead. Now, occasionally there's times when people on my side will say, "Well, you know, you're too open-minded, or you're too passive. You know, you're too tolerant of people, and you should, you know, if they're wrong, you should say they're wrong, and maybe you're pulling your punches." And I think about that sometimes. But the truth is that a lot of these commenter battles, if you have the time, can be diffused just by engaging in the conversation. Where some of the anger comes from, not all, but some, is from people who just want to be heard.
Right.
And maybe they express themselves rageaholically or inarticulately in the beginning because they're just so anxious to be heard, whereas I am in a position where people hear me all the time, that if you have a little bit of empathy, sometimes you can really diffuse it and get to the issues. Now, I don't want to be, you know, Pollyannish about this and say, mm-hmm. kumbaya, everybody will love each other. I mean, there are real jerks out there, and they suck up a lot of your time, and it's harder for people who are in more major media than I am to truly engage all of their audience. But, yes, you do see the same people, and you say, "What are you doing with your life?" And a lot of people are retired, and they don't, you know, this is something that's important to them, and they actually have the time. There's other people who I think seriously need psychiatric help and really need to get treated, like, not in my news column.
There's a couple commentators. I'm not going to give their names out, but there's one on the right, one on the left, and I'm always fascinated that, first of all, And mostly it's the Glean, I think, that gets a lot of these kinds of comments.
Well, Brian can invite that. Brian's more political in his Glean even than I was when I did it.
Brian might be listening. You know, Brian does find a way to put a little left knife twist in any story. But I do like, though, that there's a commentator out there that I think he comments on every single MinPost column out there. His word count is higher than most of the columns that he's commentating on, and I always wonder, does he have these things already kind of pre-typed up, and he's waiting to hit cut and
they're
paste?
It's just waiting to pour out of him or her. And we do have commenting guidelines at MinPost. I want to say that too. When we delete a comment, it's not just because somebody's gored our ox. I mean, if it gets personal,
right,
mean-spirited, if it gets toward if it starts to be a commenter on commenter battle, we won't let those go through because it just gets stupid. There's a thing in internet discussions called hijacking the thread,
right?
And that can happen a lot if you let people go. And frankly, I think one of the weaknesses of MinPost, maybe it shows that our reach isn't as far as it should be, is that I can recognize a lot of the commenters. I mean, I think it's more healthy if you're getting quality comments from a wide array of people. And so one of the reasons we have commenting guidelines and some moderation is to try to create not a safe space, but an open space for people who don't feel like they, you know, want to jump into a big bag of snakes.
Well, the best part is, you know, at tcmedianow.com, the website that a lot of these videos we've heard today can be viewed, I don't do a political website. I don't do politics on it. I want to be able to everyone to be able to laugh and enjoy
it's
history.
It's a shared history. Yeah, that makes sense.
And occasionally I'll get someone that'll put a comment on one of the videos and they want to skew it. And my comment is something similar to Bob Yates said many years ago. You know, if you're really that good, why don't you just do your own radio show? And the same thing with commentators is you can, you know, the blogger program is free on Google. You can do your own blog with all this great insight you have.
We've actually discovered some, we call it community voices, but it's like an op-ed at a newspaper. We've actually discovered some of those people via the comments and gotten them to write longer stuff for us. So you're right. It's the media is a lot more accessible now. You can be the media. Unfortunately, the fundamental dynamic that creates some of the rage, a lot of the rage here, is that these people can be the media. Nobody will pay attention to them because of flaws that they can absolutely not see in themselves. They're always on offense.
Right.
And so, you know, whatever their psychological needs are to go out there and start punching, they got to do it. And I also just want to add really quickly, sometimes those punches are deserved. Sometimes I get comments from people who make really good points that I have to struggle a little bit to admit to myself.
Two things real quick. Number one, do you find it tough to disconnect sometimes? Do you find it tough to disconnect from all that's going out in the world and all the information?
Absolutely. 100%. I'm the worst disconnector ever.
You and I both. Number two, you're back in school now.
Yes.
Tell me about this.
Well, I've written three columns about this for MinPost. It's pretty much all I've been writing lately, which isn't much. But my parents have thought that I graduated. I was two classes away from graduating in 1985 at the University of Minnesota. I never really set them straight because I was embarrassed.
I hope you didn't have a party and took checks from people.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
So I decided in my 53rd year that I was going to make it right. I wanted to make it right before they died, and also because I've actually lived a pretty good life. I've learned a lot about myself, and this was sort of the one thing that I really wasn't proud of. And it's actually nice to be in that position in life where you only have one thing that you're not really proud of. So I figured this is within my power to take care of it. I'm married to a wonderful woman, and she was encouraging on this, and it's been a fantastic experience. It's reminded me how great and wise 18-year-olds are. I mean, I thought that when I was 18, but I've just been super impressed with the students, especially at the U. What they lack in experience, they actually have inside in wisdom, and so I can sort of see that teacher's excitement a little bit in being able to bring out things about people that they don't even know themselves yet, or they aren't even sure about themselves yet.
So you're under the group projects yet? We have to meet at when the students
the group projects.
Good,
I got the
good
term papers now, baby.
Okay,
and
I
do not like writing unless it's for money. So so this is gonna be hard.
Now, how old's your son?
He's 15, almost 16.
Okay, now. So he's not in school with you. That would be kind of.
No, I want to get done before he. I'm taking him on a tour of the university on Monday. He's a sophomore at Washburn High in South Minneapolis. So that'll be a weird experience.
This could have been a documentary. We could have got both Broward in school together.
I don't know if anybody would have watched that.
So what's next for MinPost right now? It's online journalism. What's the next thing? Are we going to be able to keep TV, radio, and online? Is it all going to marry each other inconveniently at best? Is it going to work out?
I mean, I think it has merged, and to a great degree. And I think, you know, when we get to the point for radio, when we get to the point where the internet is in your car fully, mm-hmm. that's when that convergence is going to happen. When they stop putting AM and FM radios in cars, and it's all internet broadcast. That's when that changes. That's mm-hmm. that's going to be a big change. For now, there are still platforms that people prefer, reading a print newspaper, for example, sitting down in front of a big screen. But for everything else that's content that can truly be converged, that's what we're going to see. And I think most media executives who have thought about this at all know that that's what's happening.
A lot of late reactors. I think that the traditional media reacted very late to all this.
Well, at least a decade late. But you also have to be a little sympathetic, because it's been such a tremendous change to their revenue models mm-hmm. that to have jumped early actually would have cost them a lot of money with an uncertain revenue gain. I mean, it's really unclear how much legacy media organizations can change, especially if they're in the news business, and still be able to afford the fundamental thing that they're supposed to do.
They'll be around. My guest, David Brower, thank you so much for being on today. This is Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osmond. We'll be back next Saturday. Till then, so long.